Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my colleague, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I got to ask you, though, how was the French countryside, the wine and cheese, all of that that you bourgeoisie enjoy?
Soggy. They had...
It was wet.
Paris had its most rainfall since 1873. The River Seine was bursting its banks. It rained from Monday to Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday was just kind of cloudy and overcast, but yeah, it felt positively balmy by contrast. But it was good. It was good fun. The kids keep us busy. There's plenty going on. So yeah, all vacations are good vacations, Jeff.
I hear you. I've been having a vacation called training camp, so if my voice fails me a little bit this morning, it's because we got some rookies that are driving me nuts.
Are they learning to be professionals? What's the problem?
Well, the learning curve is pretty steep, as you know, Neil. When you see rookies come to training camp for the first time, and I don't care where you played college football, you could play college football at any of the big time programs, or you know, in small college football, it's a huge jump for these kids. It's so much learning. It's so much more intense. The competition is so much greater. And for a lot of them, the thing that gets them is, you know, they just cannot compete. They haven't developed the ability to compete at a high level for that long. And you know, the grind of it, the monotony of it, you know, it pushes them mentally, physically, emotionally, in every way. So it really reveals the ones that... Have what it takes, and a lot of times, Neil, it's not the physical stuff that gets them cut. It's the mental stuff.
Not knowing where to be in the right time and the right place, right?
Yeah, those are the guys that really drive me crazy. I think my Tourette syndrome came out a couple times this week.
So. All right, well, let's park that there, then, Jeff, because you know we don't want to stress you out too much. We'll talk a little bit about the news around the NFL. Our state of the franchise continues. We're almost at the end now. We're getting to the teams who were right at the business end of last season. Kansas City, New England and Arizona. But news-wise, there's a few things relating to the Denver Broncos, actually. And let's start right with Aqib Talib, who was shot in the leg in a Dallas nightclub, Jeff. I mean, these are the kind of calls, if you're a head coach, you don't want to receive from your security man you know, when the players aren't with the team.
Yeah, anytime the phone rings, you know, after 2 a.m., it's not a good phone call. And, you know, it's such a hard thing with all of this because, you know, you're going to lose players in this game, you know, to injury. You're going to lose players to age. You're going to lose players to trades, to free agency. But, you know, to lose players to gunfire, that's, you know, it's ridiculous. And you know, Aqib's a kid that's had... It's interesting, Neil. When I was in Dallas, he lived in my apartment complex, so I got to know him a little bit. You know, he comes across as a really quiet, good kid, but he's got a side of him. This is the second time now he's been involved with gunplay, and you know those guys just got to learn. You got to leave that stuff behind, and it's unfortunate. There's actually a lot of speculation right now about actually if he may not have shot himself. And, you know, again, when you're carrying a gun, nothing good happens.
Right. Well, yeah, he got shot in the leg and looks like he's going to... Thankfully, it's, you know, something that can be fixed with some stitches. And but, yeah, it's not the first time Aqib Talib's been around that kind of incident. Sticking with the Broncos, Jeff, they visited President Obama at the White House to celebrate their Super Bowl success. They had a lot of their former players who've moved on to other teams back for the celebrations and the festivities. But there was no Brock Osweiler. He claims, well, he didn't claim, the Houston Texans had practice. But I don't know, it kind of stood out to me that Brock Osweiler wasn't there. And I know he's got these limitations of being in training camp or mini camp with his new team, but part of me wonders whether he would have been there anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think there may be more to this than, obviously, he's trying to downplay it and say that it was just because. You know, that they were in mini camp and he's the starting quarterback and he owes it to his team to stay, which is the right thing to say. If there's, you know, if there's animosity between he and the Broncos, then, you know, so take the high road when anytime you're in the, talking in the media. But I thought it was really interesting. I don't know if you knew this, Neil, but Danny Trevathan, the linebacker they lost in free agency, went to the White House. And, you know, the Broncos flew everybody there, but they flew Danny Trevathan in coach rather than first class. So I guess that's what happened. I guess that's what happens when you leave the team in free agency.
Nice. That's classy. Jeff, I will just point out to our listeners that I'm in the NFL UK office at the moment, which is absolutely deserted. All of the staff are in compliance training, which is why this phone around the building keeps ringing and goes unanswered. So I'm just going to basically, I'm in someone's office and the calls are coming through and I'm just picking up the phone and hanging it up every 2 minutes. So whoever's on the other end of the phone, I'm going to sort of apologize by way of this podcast, and I'll also apologize to our listeners now.
But I tell you what, at least this podcast saved you from a dull, boring meeting.
Well, and this podcast has been, you know, it's not like we've had, you know, perfectly produced podcasts in the past. I mean, we've recorded from storerooms, we've recorded from the back of a bus, we've recorded with you trying to break and enter into cars. So, you know, I mean, a few telephones ringing is going to be nothing. What about Harrison Smith, Jeff? $51 million contract extension. He's now the highest paid safety in the NFL. And I said this on Twitter yesterday. You know, you can maybe argue whether he's the best safety in the NFL. I certainly put him up in that group now. He's one of the very best, but also one of the top guys in the NFL. A great guy on and off the field.
Yeah, he's one of our guys. One of our guys that's been on tour with us around the UK, and having that opportunity to spend, you know, 5 days with him, and you really got an insight into what kind of character he is. And, you know, I root for the good guys. And anytime a guy is making that kind of money and he's a good guy, I'm all for it, because Harrison's a guy that, you know, when he was out in the public with us, Neil, never was too tired to spend time with people. Always had a smile on his face. Would sign every autograph till there was no more kids standing in line to do it. And, you know, didn't come with some of the entitlement that some of those guys tend to have after they've become stars in the league. So he's a great young player, and he's really a good young person. So I'm happy for him.
Jeff, you know, we spent a lot of time with Harrison, and he is top man. And I went back to the Vikings training camp the following year, and, you know, he came off the practice field and spent a good chunk of time when he was supposed to be working out, chatting away and talking about his time in the UK, fondly remembering it. So really, really nice guy. But you can see why he's got this, you know, he draws the occasional fine for an aggressive hit. He plays right on the edge of that line in terms of aggression. He's got a little glint in his eye. He doesn't mind the physical side of the game, and he's actually not that big.
You know who he reminds me of? His style of play is very reminiscent to me of, you know, the great safety John Lynch that played for Tampa and then finished his career in Denver. You know, and there was some concern about Harrison when he came into the league. I remember going to the Senior Bowl when he was down there, and, you know, he's not the, you know, the quote safety that is prevalent now in the NFL. He's a bigger, you know, an old time, you know, patrol in the middle and control the middle of the field safety. And I think what's really helped him is Zimmer taking over in Minnesota, because it got him out of that two deep scheme, which he was good at. I mean, he's a very, very good player in any scheme. But I think the scheme that Zimmer runs in Minnesota really takes advantage of Harrison's ability to play down around the box, to blitz. You know, those are the things that he's so aggressive. He's such a great tackler. He's so physical. And, you know, the Viking defense really showcases those skills.
Absolutely. So that's the news around the NFL. Jeff, next week I'm off to I'm going to spend 2 days with the Jacksonville Jaguars, a day with the New York Giants, and a day with the Washington Redskins. They call it work, but I don't know if I really can.
Well, I tell you what, that's going to be a great trip, because you're looking at some football teams that have high expectations after their off seasons this year. And the Giants, obviously, have retooled and new coaching staff in place. I think that'll be fun for you. And Washington, you know, there's a lot of talk over here about the Redskins and you know, them feeling like they are the team to beat in, you know, in that Eastern Division. And everybody, you and I, and I think everybody in football really believes that this is the year that Jacksonville really turns the corner. I think they got a very, very good roster.
Yeah, you. Sometimes I go to these trips and I wonder what the mood of the players and the coaches will be like, but not with these three teams. Very much positive vibes about these teams all off season. So, looking forward to that. 2 days with the Jags, a day with the Giants, and a day with the Redskins. Just before we finish up on the news and promotional bits, Jeff, a bit of shameless self-plugging. I've written a preview magazine. I've been busy beavering away. So there's a 100-page guide to the 2016 season coming out called Touchdown. So, another little product for the British fans here in the UK.
Well, you know what, Emil, I think that it's so good for the fans to have the opportunity to pick up something like that that really has a guy who understands and has been around and been through it, knows the teams, knows the players, knows the game as well as you know. And I'm looking forward to picking up a copy of it myself.
Well, I'm going to send you, I'm not saying this to everyone, this is not you as in all you listeners, but you, Jeff, I'm going to send a free one, but not the rest of you. Not the rest of you.
I appreciate that. The rest of you, you've got to have to get into that pocketbook.
You will, and you can pre-order it via touchdownmag.co.uk, or it will be on sale in the shops across the country from June the 23rd. There's about 30-odd pages giving insight into the positions of the NFL, life as a quarterback, key skills needed to play running back, and it's all done by the players, Jeff. So when the receivers talk about what it takes to be a wide receiver in the NFL, it's Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown. So it's the best in the business kind of taking people through. And then there are 64 pages of team previews for the 2016 season. So that's Touchdown Magazine. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then, starting with the Kansas City Chiefs, who finished 11-5. They blew out Houston in the first round of the playoffs. And then I guess showed, Jeff, in losing by only seven on the road to New England, that they were ready to mix it up with the big boys, and really, but for some clock management stuff towards the end, where Andy Reid kind of lost his way again, they might have taken New England into overtime. But this is a Chiefs team again that feels pretty good about where they are right now.
Yeah, you know, you look at how they've developed under Andy Reid, and there really are no soft spots in that roster now. You know, you look at them, and they've got good players everywhere around the football team. I think their offensive line last year, Neil, was the biggest key to me. Was, you know, they really started to play at a level that they needed. They found a way to move the football. I like a lot of the things they do. The passing game. Obviously, 2 years ago, they didn't have a touchdown pass to a receiver. They addressed that. They brought in Macklin. They got guys that can make plays around the field. The quarterback, they manage him, I think, extremely well. I think Alex Smith is a little better than a lot of people think he is.
I agree.
But in that system, I think he's particularly effective. The question always in my mind in Kansas City was, you know, would the offensive line be able to protect him well enough, and could they run the ball well enough? And I think we saw evidence of that last year. So I think this is a Kansas City team that, you know, has to be in the conversation as you look towards the Super Bowl next year.
Yes, I mean, 1-5 start, Jeff. Then they won 10 regular season games in a row. Offense was 27th, and still passing game numbers ranked 30th, 6th in the rushing attack. Defense was top 10 across the board, 7th in total yards, 3rd in scoring, 8th in rushing, 9th in passing. So let's start on offense, because I'm with you. I think Alex Smith is better than a lot of people think. I've always said I thought he got a raw deal by the 49ers, and now look at where Kaepernick is and where Alex Smith is. I think he's more than a game manager. I think he's more athletic than people give him credit for. I saw that firsthand at Wembley Stadium. I was very impressed with how Alex ran. I think he had about 80 yards rushing that day at Wembley in a big win over Detroit. So, I mean, in a league of haves and have-nots at quarterback, I say Kansas City have. I don't say they've just got a game manager. I think they've got a bit more than that.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, there's evidence on tape now that he not only is a great athlete at the position, which is what he was when he came out of Utah. He was an athlete. He had played in that spread system. It's taken him time to learn the NFL game to develop into an NFL quarterback. But, you know, when Doug Peterson got his hands on him, I think that really was a turning point. Plus the fact, and this is where you have to, you know, statistics sometimes, you talk about 30th in the passing, and that's true. But this is a team that runs the football.
Yeah.
You know, sixth in running. One of the reasons why, you know, we talk all the time about complementary football and how, you know, your offense and defense have to suit one another. One of the reasons they're so good on defense is they don't play a lot of defense. You know, you're not. It's not. And this is going to be an interesting thing, you know, as we go forward with Chip Kelly. That when you're in those kinds of offenses, when your football team has those kinds of offenses, your defense is out on the field an awful lot, and it's out on the field really fast. And so, you know, they get tired. They play too many snaps. Kansas City. He has found, the good mix where the offense can control the ball, control the clock. They run the football, which you have to be able to do in bad weather, in the playoffs, those kinds of things. And then that keeps that defense fresh, and they're able to get after the passer because they can get after the passer very well.
You talk about running the football, Jeff, and it's going to be an interesting year for Jamaal Charles. So he's coming back from this serious knee injury that wiped out half of his, well, more than half. He was injured against the Chicago Bears, missed the Wembley game, so wiped out much of his 2015 season. But the Chiefs found replacements. Sharkhandrick West, Spencer Ware. They've still got Niall Davis, who's now buried on that depth chart and having to sort of make his impact on special teams. But, you know, Jamaal Charles is going to feel... I mean, Jamaal Charles, to me, is one of the stars of the league. I think he's a fantastic athlete, but... Now there's going to be a couple of younger guys there who will want to eat into his carries a bit.
Yeah, and that's, you know, welcome to life in the National Football League. You know, you look at those young kids that came in and were given an opportunity and ran with it. And that's a bad pun when we're talking about running backs, but, yeah. You know, they ran with it. And, you know, I think that's only good for Kansas City because the more depth you have, the more proven depth, not just depth, not just guys that you've drafted or, you know, that you think can get it done. These guys, West has proven that he's a reliable guy. And maybe eating up some of those carries that Charles had is going to be good for Charles. If he can come off this knee, you know, in a positive way, and everything I've heard from the, you know, the people I know in Kansas City is that he's, you know, doing well and the rehab's gone well. And no, that's like the more quality players you have at that position, the better you are, because that's a position, you know, where you are going to lose guys. It's, you know, taking a pounding that a running back takes in the National Football League, it's hard to stay healthy. I hope for the National Football League and for the Kansas City Chiefs that Charles comes back like he was before he got hurt, because as you said, he's an electric player. He's one of the most dynamic players in the league.
And they've got... electric and dynamic players in the passing game now, Jeff, as well. Jeremy Maclin was a very good signing from Philadelphia and comfortable in Andy Reid's attack. They'll expect to see more from Chris Connolly, I guess, as a young receiver coming into his second year. But Travis Kelce is very athletic at tight end as well. So we're starting to see more options for Alex Smith if and when he wants to go down the field. And it wasn't quite so much dink and dunk as it was in previous years, because Maclin and Kelce gave him that ability to stretch the field.
Yeah, and you know, you look at that team and the roster and how they've turned the roster over, and you know, since he's gotten there, they've done a lot of things to, you know, improve the vertical aspect of their passing game, because early on it was really just smoke screens, little bubble screens, and yep. Those kinds of, that was their passing game. Now they have the ability with the tight end to exploit the middle of the field if you want to play too deep against them, and if you don't, and you know, you try and play an 8-man box to stop the run, Maclin has the ability to strike over the top against one-on-one coverage outside. So you know, again, you look at the roster and you say, okay, they've got deep at running back, got a great tight end, and they got a guy on the outside who, you know, if you single him up, he has the ability to run past you.
Let's have a look at the defense, Jeff. And I thought it was notable at the start of free agency how they re-signed their own guys. So Derek Johnson is still there at linebacker. Tamba Ali is still in the system. They did lose Sean Smith, big physical cornerback, but they've got Marcus Peters, who was a star. They've got Eric Berry at safety, who was franchise tagged. But they also kept Jay Howard at nose tackle. They re-signed their own, so there was a lot of positives on the defensive side of the ball. But we have this Justin Houston knee injury, which emerged really late during the playoffs and at the end of last season. Now there are genuine concerns that he's going to miss not only a large chunk of this coming season, but potentially all of this season.
Yeah, you know, those are the, you know, that's price of doing business in the National Football League. Players get hurt, and it's unfortunate, particularly when you're talking about a player of Justin Houston's character and his ability. And I think that the Kansas City Chiefs will overcome that. And, you hit on an interesting topic, Neil, about signing your own. And I really believe that that's the way that you need to go when you can. Now, there are times you have to go out and you have to go get a guy because you have a need that is just so pressing. But when you sign your own, what you know what you're getting, and you're always going to pay too much in free agency. Always overpay. That's just the nature of free agency. Plus the fact you don't know what you're getting. We're going through that right now. We went out and signed a free agent and brought him in here, and he's struggling right now because it's just he's playing in a different system. You don't know how the kid learns. You don't know how he accepts coaching. You don't know any of those things when you get one that you don't have. Now, you've raised, you look at the linebacker. Shoots, he was there when Coach Vermeil was there. So he's been through the organization. He knows the way the Chiefs do business. He knows that fans know him. I think there's just so much positive about signing your own back, and particularly when your owner is good as those guys are on defense, because they are nasty on defense.
Yeah, they are. What did you make of Marcus Peters, Jeff? I mean, he developed an early reputation as a bit of a ball hawk. I mean, he gave up some plays, but in a league where you're trying to create turnovers, he did that a lot as a rookie.
Yeah, you know what? And that's a hard position to play as a rookie, a really hard position. And there was so much talk about him coming out of the University of Washington. You know, his own coaches at Washington, he'd been suspended. He'd been, they wouldn't recommend him. He's a bad character guy. Well, somehow he's found a way in Kansas City. And every once in a while you see flashes of, behaviors that you go, uh-oh. Mm. But he can play. I'm going to tell you something. He can play. And if you're going to do what they do, which is attack the quarterback and the blitz and do all the stuff that Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator, does, you've got to have players outside. And that kid came in and just seemed to, not be intimidated at all by, the NFL and the great receivers that you face on a weekly basis.
Jeff, with the AFC being wide open and Denver taking potentially a little step back with, questions at quarterback and losing some players on defense, I would have to put Kansas City among the contenders for representing that conference in the Super Bowl.
I don't think there's any question, Neil. I agree with you 100%. I think this is a team that's certainly, when you look at the top half or the top echelon of the AFC, you probably put them in the top five, I would think. Mm. And it's a roster, as we said earlier, that doesn't appear to have any weaknesses in it. Now, again, we're talking in June. We're not talking in November. You got to stay healthy. You got to, things got to go your way. You got to perform at a high level. You got to get some lucky. You got to get a bounce or two along the way. But this is a team that certainly is talented enough to go to the Super Bowl.
All right, let's move on to the New England Patriots then, who went 12-4 in the regular season. They were first in the AFC East again. Stop me if you've heard that before. They reached the AFC Championship game where Tom Brady took an absolute beating at the hands of the Denver Broncos, but they had a chance to win that game on the road. And you look back at Steven Gostkowski's missed extra point, which was crucial in that big game in the AFC. But with these Patriots, Jeff, let's start with Deflategate. And I know it seems a long, 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 long time ago, but it's still rumbling on. We are now at the point where it looks like Tom Brady is running out of chances. He's appealing the appeal of the appeal. I can't remember which appeal we're on, but he's basically put forth an appeal because his four-game ban was reinstated. He's put forth an appeal which legal experts in US describe as a Hail Mary. Those appeals are normally heard 1% of the time. So looks like Brady is running out of chances. If this legal move fails for him, his last stop is the US Supreme Court if he chooses to go that way. But the Patriots might have to open this season. They put it off for a year, but they might have to open the season with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback.
I'm no legal expert, Neil. I'm certainly no legal expert, but it appears to me to be just exactly what you're talking about. And we're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo early, and they're going to have to find a way in those first four games. Mm. They got to come out of those first four, in my opinion, 2-2. If they can come out of there 2-2, they're going to be fine because, you know, once they get Brady back, it'll pick up. I think this team, you know, if we look at what teams do in the offseason, I think this team is really interesting to me. They're interesting how they draft, and they're interesting how they go out and get players. Some players that, you know, shock you a little bit when they go get them. For example, Martellus Bennett, who's been a guy who's extremely talented, you know, bounced from Dallas to Chicago. He's been around the league a little bit. There's always been questions about how serious he was about football, all that off-season stuff. He's not a character problem, but he's just kind of a natural distraction, if you will. And, you know, he's playing a position where you say you got the best one already in the league. Why you go out and get another one? I think it's really shrewd because now, you know, you got another guy who's 6'6", incredibly athletic and a hard matchup. You put two of those guys on the field together. That's going to be interesting to see what Josh McDaniels cooks up with that.
Yeah, of course, Jeff, the Patriots made a few of those shrewd moves you talked about, veteran signings. They also got Shea McClellan, who was a first-round draft pick with the Bears. They got Chris Long, who was deemed surplus to requirements with the Rams. That's kind of how this team operates, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, they look for a specific kind of guy, and I think the McClellan one is going to be really interesting to me because in Chicago, you know, he never really had a home. You know, here's a kid that was, you know, kind of a hybrid defensive end coming out of Boise State, drafted first, and, you know, he didn't really fit in any of the things that they did in either of the program, whether it was, you know, Mark Trestman's Bears or John Fox's Bears. And, you know, they tried him and they tried him at linebacker. They tried him all over the place. He's athletic and he's a football player, but he just can't seem to find a niche. And what the Patriots maybe do better than anybody, Neil, is they find guys that can do something well, and then that's what they ask him to do. They don't ask him to do things they can't do. And they really like players who have, you know, just kind of picky, a guy like Rob Ninkovich, for example. Here's a guy that gets cut. You know, he's just kind of a guy around, kind of hanging around. And they bring him in, and they find that kind of hybrid end, outside backer, you know, position for him. And his career blossoms. And I'm anxious to see where they're going to play McClellan and how they're going to use him. And if this is not a chance for him to kind of revitalize his career, because there was high expectations of him when he came out of Boise as a first rounder.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get a tail of the tape on the Patriots then. So offense was ranked 6th in the NFL. Rushing was 30th. And they had this brief sort of spark at the start with Deion Lewis there in the running game. But too often, Jeff, they just completely decided to drop Tom Brady and throw 60 times per game. I mean, it was a complete abandonment of the running game at times, which is why it was ranked 30th in the NFL. Passing attack was 5th. Let's start with, a unit which can impact the run and the pass, the offensive line. It's still a concern for me because, you know, Tom Brady was absolutely battered in that AFC Championship game. And when you look at what the Patriots have to do, Jeff, everything is kind of predicated on Brady getting that ball out of his hands in, what, 2.1 seconds, something like that?
Yeah, and you know what, Neil, you know, I went in an off-season, I did some off-season research and really paid attention to what they do and the teams that defended him well and the teams that didn't, and paid closest attention to that Bronco game. You know, what the Broncos had the ability to do, and not every team can, but they had the ability to match up and play man-to-man against those wide receivers. If you play zone against them, they'll cut you to shreds because he you can't fool it. You know, you just don't. It's almost impossible to show him something that he hasn't seen. And they rushed him and forced him, you know, to go to his second and third options by doubling Gronkowski. And they really showed their Achilles heel in that game. They're not, particularly because of the injuries they had. I mean, you lose Nate Solder, obviously, and now Sebastian's got to go over from right tackle to left tackle. There are all kinds of things that were problematic in the offensive line. But some of it was scheme-wise, and they were just so determined that they were gonna throw the ball, they were going to go to empty and do those things. They put too much pressure on the offensive line, and if you took away the quick throw that, you know, for Brady. It was difficult for him. So I think there's a formula for success against this team. And this is a team, Neil, I really truly believe has to find some more diversity in the offense. They have to be able to run the football a little bit more. And still, they don't have that quick strike, big play wide receiver. You know, we talk about Amendola and we talk about, you know, Edelman, and those are great players. And Gronkowski's the best tight end in the league. Mm. But what's lacking? What's the missing piece? And they can't seem to find it, is that vertical receiver. They drafted him, and they tried to develop him, they tried free agency, but they haven't been able to develop a vertical guy. And I think until they do, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a problem for him.
Well, I wonder, Jeff, I don't know if they think it's something that Tom Brady can't throw anymore, so they just load him up with guys that can stretch the field horizontally. But I'm with you, and Chris Hogan is a super smart player, who's an absolute classic fit for the Patriots. But to me, he's another Amendola and another Edelman to a degree. You know, so they have abandoned that, but they just keep loading up with these guys that stretch the field the other way, across the field, not down the field.
Yeah, and you know what? I think, and let's talk about Chris Hogan a little bit, because this is a kind of an interesting one too, because he was no better than the third option at Buffalo most of his time at Buffalo.
Yeah,
but there was evidence that, you know, he could, you know, go vertical. He can hit run a seam for you. Now, whether he can do that on a consistent basis is another issue. If you're getting the third matchup, if you're getting the third best DB in the matchup, well, that's different than if now you're the second option. Let's say that Amendola gets Edelman gets the number one guy, or Gronk gets the number one guy, then if you get the second guy, you better be able to step up and produce. They must believe he can, because there was guaranteed money in that contract, and that's not something you do unless you feel like that guy's a definite guy for you.
No, and the Patriots aren't always benevolent with their money, Jeff. We saw this offseason, Danny Amendola forced to take I think it was about 4.3, it was more than $4 million pay cut. To stay with the Patriots. Now, you can credit Amendola, he wants to stay with a winner and a contender, but this is, again, that business side of the deal. This was a receiver for me who was on the hot seat coming into this season, and financially that's been borne out, because he's been forced to take a huge chunk of money off his salary.
I think when you look at the, and this is interesting for the fans to just kind of chew on for a while, when you look at a player like that, who at this point in his career, and who has been a very good player for his career, takes that kind of pay cut, what he feels, you know, I mean, it's not just him saying, okay, I'll help the team and I'll take a pay cut because, you know, we got cap issues. There's a selfish side to this too. He recognizes the fact that he's just about ready to price himself out of the league. Mm. And so by taking that pay cut, he helps ensure that he can be on the roster. There is a place for him on the roster, because the economics, the business of the business are, you know, when these guys get up into that point in their career, do the dollars match the productivity? And, you know, again, that's that dicey thing. So when you see a veteran take a $4 million pay cut, he's trying to ensure that he can be a guy that they can fit into the roster for another couple of years.
Jeff, I look at Brady, I still see an all-time great. I still see a guy right at the very top of his game. Others will say that he can be rattled and that he can complain and whine too much. What do you see with this quarterback? Because he divides opinion, because he's the quarterback of the Patriots, and we either love them for all of the Super Bowls they win, or we're intensely jealous of them.
Well, I think that is really, really an interesting observation, because for a guy who tries not to be, a lightning rod in the public, who is maybe as next to his head coach, talks more and says less than anybody I know, then, you know, he's a guy that just seems to be, like, my son can't stand him. Why can't he stand it? Because, you know, he led the drive that, you know, beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl. And so I think that he really is an interesting guy. Even more than Peyton, he's a guy that, you know, you love him or you hate him. And he has such a milquetoast personality that you would think that this is a guy everybody would love because he's such a great player. I don't see decline in this game, Neil. I studied the Patriots in the offseason. I don't see decline in this game. I still think he can deliver the football. He takes great care of himself. There was a piece this week I read about Aaron Rodgers, how he changed his diet and all that. Mm. And he got that from Tom Brady. You know, he doesn't eat dairy products anymore. Brady is doing everything he can to ensure that he's going to continue to play for as long as he can and play at a high level. And I don't see decline in his game. They say you can be rattled. I'm going to tell you something. I don't care who you are. If you'd have taken the shots that he took in Denver, and, yeah, you'd be rattled too.
And Jeff, he almost led them back to win that game. You know, he was brilliant at the end of that game.
He really was, and a couple of the throws that he made were just unbelievable. The ball he got to Gronkowski at the end of the game, I mean, it just, you look at it on tape. The great thing about watching the coaches tape, you know, as you know, is you know, you can rewind it, you can slow it down, and you can really see how the thing. I mean, it took incredible courage for him to stand in there like he was and get battered around like he was. And there's another play late in the game, which I thought spoke volumes too, where he scrambled out of the pocket and picked up a first down and just got whacked on the sideline. And, you know, so if you think he's, you know, he's not tough, or you think he's got courage issues, I think you got to look at the tape a little longer.
Yeah, I would say the same. I'm supposed to hate him because he leads the Patriots to victories in Miami's division year after year, but I don't. I'm a huge Tom Brady fan. I look at and I think he has that courage as well. I think he's got Joe Montana like skills in the way he slices up a defense. But we saw it in the playoffs, Jeff, against Kansas City. He's diving for the end zone, getting hit on the back of the head. He's taking blows. A couple of years ago in the playoffs against Baltimore, he's diving over the pile to try and get a touchdown, and Ray Lewis is smacking him in the back. And you know, I think he's very, very brave. I think so. But I've spoken to, you know, when I spoke to Ryan Clark, the old Steelers safety, he was adamant that Brady sees ghosts and you can get to him. But you know, I think he's got the courage to really shine there. He's an absolute surgeon, and I like the fact that he's, you know, he's not afraid to go on Facebook and stick it to a few people every now and then, Jeff. I mean, he'll goad some opponents. He's, you know, you're right. He doesn't say too much at press conferences, but he gets on social media and he has a little go.
I would love to spend an afternoon with him and just talk, you know, football and talk life, because I think he's a very intelligent guy. I think he's a guy that gets, you know, what his responsibility is. And I don't know, you know, if you look at, and this is what I think fans, we really have to sit back, and I say fans, we, because I'm a fan of the game first. Mm. We have to sit back and wonder how many times in the history of this game there has been a combination of head coach and quarterback that have been so in tune with one another, so in tune with the way things. I mean, he is exactly a Belichick guy. I mean, like we talked about, is how he handles the media, how he competes, how smart he is, all of the qualities that, you know, Bill Belichick would want his quarterback to embody, Tom Brady embodies. And I think this is a unique mix. It's a very, very successful marriage, obviously, after all these years, and it's not going to go on forever, so we need to appreciate every snap we get to watch this guy.
Yes, appreciate greatness when we get the chance to see it, because Brady's got 4 Super Bowl wins. That's the most of any quarterback in NFL history, but for 2 miracle Eli Manning throws, it would have been 6 quarterback wins for Tom Brady. Let's move on to the defense, Jeff, because, you know, this is a defense, I think, although they're not a collection of stars, they've got good or very good players at all 3 levels of the defense. Malcolm Brown showed up and, you know, was good as a rookie on the line. Jamie Collins, we know about at linebacker. Devin McCourty and Malcolm Butler in the secondary. The one thing I would look at and say, well, where's your Von Miller? Where's your game-changing edge rusher? And Chandler Jones might have been that, but he was sent off packing to Arizona in exchange for Jonathan Cooper at right guard.
Well, you know, again, when you talk about the Patriots, it's, you know, if you go back in the past, you know, you talk about the no-name defense, right? The guys that, you know, just played great defense and nobody really knew who they were. That's a little bit the way the Patriots are. After the Teddy Bruschi era in New England, and, you know, Willie McGinnis, and that they kind of done it on defense with a collection of guys that aren't big name guys, you know, and but they all function inside the structure of their defense extremely well. Haven't gotten to know Matt Patricia and, you know, the way they operate in New England. The number one thing, I think, maybe not number one, but very, very close to athleticism. And if you're going to be a Patriot, you better be smart. You better be a guy who can understand concepts, that has discipline, that will play the game the way the Patriots want it played. When you watch them play structurally on defense, Neil, you're not impressed particularly with the overall skill or speed of the team. Like, you put on Seattle's tape. Put on Seattle's tape, you put on Denver's tape, and it just, you go, wow, those guys can fly. You put on New England's tape, and you're not wowed by what you see athletically on the tape, but what you do get a wow factor on is how structurally sound they are, how everybody plays together, how they seem to understand exactly what the opponent wants to do, and they do a great job of making you play left-handed. They do a great job of making you beat them with something that's not what you do well. And so that's just who they are. That's their identity on defense.
Are they the best team in the AFC, Jeff?
Pardon me?
Are they the best team in the AFC?
I think that remains to be seen, because I think it's going to be an interesting year for them. You know, obviously they went through so many changes in the offseason. You know, they fired their offensive line coach, and, you know, that was a big, I thought that was an interesting move. You know, Scar's coming back, which is going to help them, I think. You know, obviously getting Nate Solder back is going to help them. But I'm still not sold on, when you watched them offensively, I just really, truly believe, Neil, that you have to be able to run the ball some. And they couldn't or didn't or wouldn't last year. I don't know which combination of it was, but this is a team that I think needs to be able to do that a little bit better. And I certainly think they're as well coached as anybody in the league. But the Brady suspension, you lose your quarterback for 4 games, I think that's going to impact them.
All right, let's move on to the Arizona Cardinals then, who went 13-3 in the NFC West. They won the NFC West division. They lost the NFC Championship game to the Carolina Panthers. They'd squeezed past Green Bay in an absolute thriller in the divisional round, winning in overtime. And then the wheels just came off, Jeff. I mean, Carson Palmer, I don't know if he had... I mean, we know his thumb and his hand was bothering him a bit, but it was a situation where Bruce Arians has even said it himself. Things started badly and they spiraled out of control. It was, 7 turnovers in that championship game loss to the Carolina Panthers from Carson Palmer. He threw 6 interceptions. And the biggest game of the year, biggest game that this team's had since they were in the Super Bowl, they lose 49-15.
Yep, and let's be honest about it. You look at Carson Palmer, and the question, you know, it's interesting. Everybody wants to talk about Andy Dalton not being able to win the big one, and you know how that always seems to haunt quarterbacks. But Carson Palmer, you have to wonder that a little bit yourself, because if you look at the kind of, you know, how they imploded, it was really at the quarterback position. That was, he just didn't seem at all comfortable. He didn't, you know, it was the bright lights in the big stage. And, you know, here's a veteran quarterback who you think would be able to be comfortable in that scenario and in that setting. And I just really think he played extremely poorly. It looked like the game was too big for him. Maybe that's just the next step in the evolution of the Arizona Cardinals. But this is a good football team, and their quarterback just didn't play well enough when they needed him to play well.
Well, it was surprising, Jeff, wasn't it? Because he'd had such a good season. He'd looked every inch your star franchise quarterback. Yes, he's not going to run out of the pocket. He is a pure pocket passer. But everything that Carson Palmer did up to that point was on point. It was exactly what you would have wanted from your quarterback, and there were not only bad throws, there were bad decisions, and as you said, it was more alarming, I think, that everything just looked a bit too much for him.
Yeah, and you know, there's a we call it a deer in the headlight look.
Yeah,
you know? And there was some deer in the headlight look to him. He just, after he threw about the second interception, as we watched it, you know, I remember we made the comment that, you know, that he's just not, you know, And it happens sometimes. I mean, it's reality. It's a competitive game, and you know there are times when you just don't play well. Well, the problem was he didn't play well, and they didn't have an answer. Mm. You know, sometimes you can go to other things to overcome it. Your defense can make a play. You can get a big play on special teams. You run the ball better, or whatever it was. But they had become so reliant on him and his decision making and his throwing, and at the biggest moment. He kind of just disappeared.
Jeff, I'm getting jealous now because you're in a coffee shop, aren't you? And I haven't had one all morning.
I tell you what, I got a great one sitting right in front of me. It's about half gone. Oh. Nice, big, dark one with a shot of espresso in it. I'm getting ready for practice, Neil.
Yeah. All right, let's look at Taylor the tape. So Arizona's offense was first in the NFL, eighth in rushing, second in passing. Top five defense. They were sixth against the run, eighth against the pass. Jeff, they don't really use the tight end very much, but they are not just two deep at receiver. They're what, five deep? You've got Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, John Brown, Jerron Brown, J.J. Nelson. Then you add in David Johnson and Chris Johnson at the running backs position. I mean, this is a team that's quite rightly was number one in the NFL last year, and they're going to score points again this year.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about those receivers, when you look at that group of receivers. And, you know, again, Arizona, because they're Arizona and they're in Arizona, they're never going to get the kind of notoriety that, you know, you're going to get in a New York, one of the major, you know, media outlets. But you look at that receiving core and you say that might be as good as there is in the National Football League, and they got everything that you need. They got size, they got strength, they got vertical people, they got guys that can go inside, they got, you know, possession guys, they got it all. They got everything that you need there. Now, again, the tight end is kind of a lost position in that offense, but you only got one ball and you got a lot of players to get it to. You know, so, you know, and then you look at the two running backs. I mean, David Johnson is a, you know, a guy that I think can do just about everything at the running back position. And Chris Johnson still has that elite level speed, that ability to take a zone play, cut it back, and go 80 out the back door. And, you know, so that's a nice mix for them. You know, they're better on the offensive line. This is a very, very, very good offensive football team. And you got an offensive football coach in Bruce Arians, who to me is one of the better coaches in the National Football League, that he really believes, you know, and here's quote, no risk, no biscuit, you know, and that's just the way it is. I mean, he's going to take his shots, and this is a team that's tough to defend.
Well, this is a classic example, Jeff, of a coach who's saying, well, this is my system, this is how I like it to be done, now I'm going to go and find the players to do it. You know, Larry Fitzgerald isn't that field stretcher anymore, but he's developed into a player who can make so many catches out of the slot now as well. You know, Larry Fitzgerald moves all across that line, but when you look at J.J. Nelson, John Brown, Jerron Brown, Jeff, they can flat out fly. So Bruce Arians is going to take his shots, isn't he, at least three or four, five times down the field, because if he doesn't complete all of them, what does it do to a defense when you know you're playing an offense that is willing to take those shots?
Well, it backs you up. It backs you off a little bit, and you know, when you have a quarterback who has an arm that Palmer does, and he has one of the better arms in the league, and you got a quarterback coach who, you know, in Arians, and that's how Bruce came up as an offensive coach, a quarterback coach who believes in that guy and believes in his ability to, you know, stretch the field, and he's got speed outside, and he's got fits, and it's interesting. You made a great comment, Neil, about the evolution of Larry Fitzgerald from being that featured outside guy, the vertical guy when Bolden was there, and you know, now he's kind of later in his career has evolved his game to be that quote possession guy, the guy that can get in the middle of the field. And a lot of guys don't want to make that transition late in their career because they've always been outside, they've always been the field stretcher, and that's what they feel is going to be their role forever. Well, you know, the first thing that starts to go is your legs and your ability to stretch the field. So he, you know, has been unselfish enough to accept a new role with the Cardinals and embrace that role. And I thought in the playoffs, you know, he was outstanding. In the games that mattered most, Larry Fitzgerald stepped up the most.
David Johnson, you mentioned at running back, Jeff. He started off looking like a Chris Johnson type. He had a couple of really long scores from long distance early in his rookie year. But by the end of the year, And I'm thinking back to the Sunday night game against Philadelphia. He looked like the second coming of Marshawn Lynch. I mean, he can run around you, he can run over you, he can run away from you. This is a guy I'm really looking forward to seeing in 2016.
You know, and I liken him to maybe a Matt Forte with more top-end speed.
Yeah.
Because he has the ability to do everything well. And, you know, when you have a guy that can, you know, be an, quote, every down back, and you don't have to sub him out in third down because he can't catch or, you know, he can't pass protect. Or, but this kid, this young kid can do just seemingly almost everything. Mm-hmm. And then you have a home run hitter in Chris Johnson behind him who, you know, will give you, at the end of his career, doesn't need to take 20 or 30 snaps a game. He can give you 15 or so really good reps. I think that's a nice mix.
Let's move on to the defense, Jeff. And I want to start with a question from the mailbag, which comes from Harry Ferguson, who says, do you think the Cardinals should make Tyrann Mathieu the highest paid safety in the NFL, or do injury problems worry you? So what is it now? A couple of torn knee ligaments for Tyrann Mathieu, including late at the end of last season. When healthy, Jeff, I would say now, I mean, I've seen him described as, you know, pound for pound, the best player in the NFL. I think he's one of those chess piece type players, but I would say he is, you know, he's a different type of player to Earl Thomas, but for me, he's the best safety in the NFL when healthy.
Well, I think he's the guy that can do the most at that position. He's an extremely good tackler. He's obviously a ball hawk. His whole career, and again, this is a kid, Neil, I know very well because I recruited him as a high school athlete out of St. Augustine's in New Orleans.
Yep.
And you know, the thing that people don't get, and I'm sure you have talked to guys or maybe even been around him a little bit, he is not very big. He doesn't look like a safety. He looks like a corner. I mean, but he is tough as nails. The only thing that would worry me is exactly what you talked about, the durability factor, because there's just not that much of him, and he doesn't know how to play the game. You know, he plays the game like he doesn't want to live forever. You know what I mean? I mean, he's a guy that gets after it, and he will hit you, and he can run, and he can cover, and he can tackle, and he can do everything. Now, you know, how many years can you do it at that size? You know, Bob Sanders was a guy that was a great safety and a great hitter and all that stuff, but was small, and, you know, you just can't sustain it over time. So I think he is the best safety in the league right now. I think he's going to get paid that way. I think Harrison Smith's deal, you know, sets up a precedent. It sets the bar. That's the way negotiations go. And, you know, I think Mathieu is so important to that football team. Not just on the field, but I think emotionally. I think emotionally he's one of the absolute leaders of that team.
You got Patrick Peterson was back to his very best in 2015. And I think, in a way, Jeff, when you look at this Cardinals defense, they were ahead of the curve because we had Deone Buchanan, who was a former defensive back, spent much of the season playing inside linebacker. Now we've seen a number of teams draft these players like Sua Cravens with the Washington Redskins, players that are going to be kind of tweeners, if you will, in terms of defensive backs or linebackers. So this was a big thing for the Arizona Cardinals to get ahead of that curve, and Deone Buchanan was I guess he epitomized this defense, Jeff. They fly to the football.
Yeah, they can all run, and you know they're very athletic. They're very, very aggressive schematically. They blitz more than any team in the National Football League. They put an awful lot of pressure on those corners in the back end. But that's what they drafted those guys to be. And I think when you look at this football team, Calais Campbell is, a very underrated big man inside.
Definitely.
You talked about Buchanan, linebacker. They can run on every level of the defense. And I was in Arizona working out free agent kickers when the Chandler Jones deal went down. And you'd have thought that they just, you know, you'd have thought that they had completely, you know, broke the bank when they made that trade. Because the one thing that Arizona had spotlighted as a need area for them was an elite level pass rusher, because they just felt like they had to almost scheme the rush. You know, when I say scheme the rush, they had to always go plus one. They had to put more the guys in the rush than in protection. They didn't have the ability to beat you with four guys rushing or three guys rushing. And they think that Chandler Jones will be that guy.
And he needs to be, Jeff, in terms of redeeming himself, because that there was those kind of weird off-season, off-the-field things, excuse me, at the back end of last season in New England, which may be a reason why the Patriots didn't want this guy who'd had 10-plus sacks on the year. They didn't want him around anymore. But, you know, there's definitely talent there, but there are some question marks. We've got to wait and see, haven't we?
Yeah, and, you know, again, they addressed that. You know, Arizona addressed that question, because that was one of the first questions that people asked.
Sure.
You're talking about a guy had that weird, you know, incident with the police. And, you know, I think there are two things, New England letting go, because, number one, that issue. Number two, you know, he's just coming up into his contract year, and they knew they were going to have to pay him a ton of money. So, you know, they needed help on the offensive line. To me, it's a win-win trade, one of those good trades. They get a guy that was highly thought of when he came out of college in Arizona, never really had the kind of career in Arizona, the offensive line Cooper, that you know, they thought he would be. He's athletic, he's big, he's got all the qualities. So New England says, we need offensive linemen, you need a pass rusher, let's make a deal. I think, you know, it's a win for both teams if Chandler Jones can, you know, handle himself. Now, there's maybe no better franchise, you know, for him to go to than Arizona, because Arians seems to be able to be one of those coaches that can handle, you know, guys with histories.
That's what we said about Robert Kemdichie, Jeff, wasn't it? This is a good, could be a good fit for this troubled young rookie.
Yeah. Now, the question is that here's the delicate thing, the balancing act, if you will, as a coach. You can handle a certain number of guys like that if your locker room is strong enough, if your, you know, player development program is good enough, if your coaching staff is resilient enough, but you can't have too many of them.
Right.
Because, you know, again, there's a place where you got to say enough's enough. And as you start to bring in those kinds of guys, there's some risk involved in that. Now, what you hope is that, and again, it's interesting, Bruce Arians is a second chance guy himself. You know, Tyrann Mathieu's a second chance guy. You know, as you go through the roster, Kemdichie's a second chance guy. Chandler Jones is now a second chance guy. You look at those guys, and, you know, again.
And Carson Palmer to a degree, Jeff.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's a great call. And so when you look at it, you just got to be wary of having too many second chance guys.
Are they a Super Bowl contender still, Jeff? I mean, they came from one game away from being in the Super Bowl last year. It's always more difficult, I think, at the moment. To me, it's that NFC is much more crowded than the AFC in terms of real heavyweights. But where do you place the Cardinals?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, they're talented enough. And then, you know, again, you've got to be able to, as I said, you've got to stay healthy. And it's, you know, we're talking again in June. But in June, I would say, yeah, they're a team that's got an opportunity. That we talk about top five teams, in, you know, and I think they're that level. This is a team, frankly, that I root for. And I root for them because I root for Bruce Arians. And I would love to see a guy who's been, you know, fired as many times as Bruce has been fired and, you know, overlooked. And, you know, Chicago, the fans in Chicago probably just still sick because, you know, he wanted the Bears job and finished second on it. He finished second on the Indianapolis job. He finished second a lot of times and finally got his opportunity at an advanced age, well into his 60s. And he's such a breath of fresh air. Can you imagine how much fun we would have at the Super Bowl, Neil, if he's there? Oh. I think it would be a blast.
What a story he is as well. Two-time NFL Coach of the Year. Didn't get his first head coaching job until he was 60 years old. Let's take a couple of questions from the mailbag, Jeff. And a good X's and O's one to start for you. It comes from Dylan Erickson, who says, Jeff, what are the key differences in terms of skills required to be a good slot cornerback versus an outside corner?
All right, that's a great question, because one of the reasons it's very difficult to play inside a slot corner is just the position that you're in. If you think about it, you're an outside player. If we talk about the route tree, which is, you know, again, another question for another day, but it's what the routes are. You know, they're inside breaking routes, the hooks, the curls, the digs, the slants, the outside breaking routes, the outs, the corners, the goes. Well, if you're playing corner, you really... You have fewer routes on the route tree to play. When you go inside the slot corner, because of the nature of where you're positioned on the field, the corner route is harder to cover, the post is harder to cover, the dig is harder to cover, and typically you're in there with guys that are moving around. The slot has the ability in the NFL to move and go in motion, which again changes the dynamics of your coverage, changes your leverages, changes your angles, and so you have to be extremely athletic. And you have to have great anticipation when you play in the, as a slot corner. Spot quickness is really, like you get against a guy like Cole Beasley, if you don't have quickness, you're not going to lay a hand on him. And then you get against some of those bigger slots, and you know that you better have some physicalness. So it requires all of the you know the characteristics that you look for, and you got to tackle more because closer to the box.
All right, let's take a question from, well, not a question. Daniel Brown challenged me to talk about the Chiefs and not use the phrase game manager. I don't think I managed that. I think I failed on that task. This is a good question, Jeff, to finish off this week from George Swift. And we've got a number of teams now that, you know, I'm going to visit some of the teams in minicamp next week. All three of those teams, Jacksonville, New York, and Washington, they have their quarterback situation fixed. But there are a number of teams around the NFL where the starting quarterback is not going to be known next week, and it's not going to be known until we get into training camp. So George Swift says, "You know, Jeff, is it unsettling for a team not to know who the starting quarterback is in the offseason?" I mean, we're talking San Francisco, Cleveland, Denver. I mean, Jeff, in your experience in professional football and in college football, if you don't know who the quarterback is in the offseason, does it matter, or is it about knowing from day one?
Well, I think the deeper into your offseason you get, now we're through the OTAs, we're into mini camps, and we're just about ready to go on break before we come back from training camp, you would like to have, and I think if you polled 32 NFL coaches and 9 head coaches in the Canadian Football League, I think you would like to have that firmly established by the time you go to training camp, because how you parcel your reps in training camp, all of those things are important. Plus the fact that that is the number one position. That's the leadership position on the football team. And if guys are battling it out, you know, who does the team follow? And, you know, clearly if you have a guy in place, if you have a guy, you know, that is established at that position, it's a much easier transition. Now, what's fascinating to me is the defending Super Bowl champion, and this doesn't happen very many times, nice. The defending Super Bowl champion has this very same issue. Is it going to be Sanchez or is it going to be Paxton Lynch? And there's going to be all that speculation and all that drama circulating around that can be a kind of a distraction for your football team.
All right, Jeff, we are officially out of time now. So next week, we're going to finish off our state of the franchise. Just Carolina and Denver to go as we wrap up all 32 teams in the NFL. And next week is when the NFL teams wrap up their mini camps. Next week is mandatory mini camps. And after that, they head off for 5 or 6 weeks of sunshine before the grind of training camp begins. So, Jeff, I'll be in Florida next week when we speak. It should be good fun. And you'll be one step closer to your season.
Yeah, we're still grinding away. We got our first exhibition game this weekend. And, again, it's been great doing this morning, Neil, but I got some backsides to chew. I got some rookies to get after here this morning. So.
All right, get after it, and I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee. Say goodbye to the good folks, Coach.
All right, aloha.